and good morning. You are listening to People Rise Up on your non-commercial community radio station, KBOO. My name is Andrew Geller, and this program has been made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from the Portland Alliance, the city's oldest alternative progressive newspaper, reporting on issues ignored or distorted by corporate-dominated media, and providing a voice for social justice activists, environmentalists, trade unionists, and the progressive community. Information at 503-239-4991 or theportlandalliance.org. So welcome to the show. Got quite the assemblage of folks that'll be speaking with you between now and 11 a.m., all of them seasoned forest activists with specialty in a particular region or, in some instances, even just a national forest. We're going to start out on the wet side, which also happens to be the west side here. Going to look at Mount Hood National Forest and general region. Then we're going to go down to the Willamette National Forest. We're going to go out to central and eastern Oregon. And then we're going to close out the hour with a look at what's going on down in southern Oregon, and specifically sort of the southwestern part, as there's not much in the way southeastern forest-wise. Okay, so first, we've got here in the studio Charlie Ferranti. He is a board member with BARC, and we're going to talk for about the next 12 or 15 minutes about Mount Hood. Welcome to the airwaves, Charlie.
Thank you very much, Andrew.
So this whole program is going to be very much guest-driven, so I'm going to kind of open it up with, tell us a little bit about an example or two of the most pressing issues you folks are dealing with in Mount Hood, and it doesn't necessarily need to be logging-related.
Oh, thank you very much for having me here today. It's important to remember that Mount Hood National Forest is, I think, even publicly described by the Forest Service as Mount Hood, as Portland's backyard. So this really is a wonderful spot that is between 45 minutes and 2 hours away from Portland, depending where you want to go. It holds Mount Hood, the Timberline Lodge, and just a host of amazing and rare environments. It's a transition zone. It's not just wet side. Certainly the west side of the Mount Hood National Forest is wet, and you have a temperate rainforest environment there. But as you head east, you can get into the oak and pine sort of open park-like savanna area. So it is just a fantastic spot. You get all the different types of forests that you could possibly get in one small area, and it's right here in Portland's backyard. That being said, it's a national forest, and all national forests are under the control of the Department of Agriculture. And so it has been used for decades as one more place you can extract wealth from. Now, on the surface of that, you might say, is that a bad thing? Our houses are made of wood, our furniture is made of wood. Are you against wood? Are you against, living? And that's certainly not the case. It's very important to remember that the Department of Agriculture tells people that over the last 10 years or so, you're looking at national forests providing between 2% and 4% of the wood products in the U.S. So it is not providing a significant quantity of wood for the U.S. So that piece of extraction is not part of the national need or national puzzle.
Well, and if the historical trend still applies, they're losing money on a lot of the timber sale operations that they have going on. It might not be every forest every year, but overall, at least through the kind of later part of the 90s, and I guess the early part of this decade, the timber sale program was a net loser.
Actually, it's been a net loser since the early 50s. Okay. It is always a net loser. So even if you go back to the 60s, where the national forest system, the whole system, was providing up to almost 20% of the timber used in the U.S., it was losing money. And that was before any of the environmental regulations. So when you hear, the environmental regulations are costing us money and making it lose, that's not true.
Right, and the same was true regarding jobs, because the industry was pulling jobs out of the region here in the Northwest years before the whole controversy regarding the spotted owl and the whole Northwest Forest Plan.
Absolutely. Again, that's another Trojan horse of an argument. You've got in the Pacific Northwest from 78 to 88, peak logging years, absolute peak logging years. You had a 20%, one-fifth of all the timber-related jobs were gone. And it's from the, I call them the Asians, the consolidation, automation, mechanization. The Asians trim jobs. It's just the way they work. Higher productivity means they don't need as many bodies. So these are all Trojan horse distractions. And so what we're looking on at Mount Hood here and the other national forests is how are they being run in terms of the public access? These are public forests. I mean, somebody from Alabama has as much right to come to Mount Hood National Forest. It's a national forest. And to see what there is to be seen. And what there is to be seen is just spectacular old growth, remnant old growth forests, wild salmon runs. There's been wolverine tracks found on Mount Hood. And it's just a wildland, a great wildland. But in that wildland, you have very significant threats due to the years, decades of logging.
And the I know threats due to logging are sort of ongoing. I took a look at BARC's website, which is www.bark-out.org, and there's a link from the People Rise Up website there. And you guys have the most impressive listing of timber sale projects in a really well-organized way of any forest activist website I've seen in, well, I guess ever. And I was stunned by how many projects are ongoing in different phases. Are there any of those that you're particularly interested in trying to get folks involved with or are at sort of a critical juncture of maybe happening or not?
There's a number of big projects from old growth logging to plantation thinning going on right now and in various stages from their early discussions through their logging right now. And it really depends on what people want to see. It's important to realize that, I mean, the Forest Service today will continue to say they don't do old growth logging. Mount Hood National Forest will say that. And that's just not true. I mean, and some of the ranger districts aren't planning them anymore, but they still have them in the pipeline, and there's still, litigation is holding them up. Some of them are being logged right now. There's the High Links, the High North Timber Sale. If you go to the BARC website, you can get a map to the High North Timber Sale, and it's only about 15, 20 minutes south on Route 26 from Timberline, to give you an idea where it is. It's a little south, southeast from Timberline. And there's ongoing old-growth logging there right now in some of the units. And it's interesting to see that these are going on. Now, this is public forest. There are no closures going on here, so it's legal for you to go there at any time. You can go there while they're logging. But that's – I mean, it's logging equipment. It's big equipment. So, I've never chosen to do that just because of the danger involved with, these are big pieces of equipment running big logs around. But you can go there when they've stopped logging in the afternoons. On the weekends, they're not working. And you can go there and inspect. It's open. There's no closures. There's nobody shooting at you. There's none of that stuff that occurs in other forests. Mount Hood is pretty friendly. And so that would be one example for where people could go out and see what's going on. Another closer to home example, I mean, that's about an hour and a half away. Closer to home, you have the No Whiskey Timber Sale being planned, and that's about 45 minutes from Portland. It's right down 224 just outside of Estacada. Again, website will give you maps to that area. And that's not an old-growth forest. That's a post-fire regrowth. And so it's much younger. And the threat there is you have logging, you have illegal off-road vehicle use, and you can see how the what the area looks like now, what currently logged areas look like. You can see unrecovered clear cuts. You can see thinned areas, currently thinned areas. And you can get it early on in the planning. And there's a lot of sort of dark feelings about what's going on in the forest world. Mount Hood is somewhat of an exception. There are the people who you contact about this, for the most part, are listening. They may not agree with you, but they will take your comments seriously, they will answer your comments. It's a big organization with a lot of different people. So some people are disingenuous, some people are absolutely straight up, but all of them are listening to what you have to say, and it has a big impact over time. It really does.
Just as sort of closing remarks, can you talk a little bit about how folks can get themselves involved, like this week or next week, if they wanted to get out into the woods?
BARC has held for, I think it's 6 years now, hikes on the second Sunday of every month. We gather up at about, I think it's 41st and Hawthorne or 40th and Hawthorne at the Daily Grind on Sundays, the second Sunday. So it'll be September 12th, I think, this next month. Get there around 9:15. And we go out and we take a look. What's written on paper is just written on paper. And in a diverse, complex forest, what counts is what's on the ground. That's where the ground truthing comes from. And when you have a chance to go out there and see on the ground what is being proposed in paper, you get a much better idea of where all of this comes together. And that's what BARC does. We ground truth all of these timber sales to see if what's written on the paper corresponds to what's on the ground. And that's how I got involved. I went ground truth as a second Sunday hike. They took us to some beautiful forests. I became more interested, went on some more hikes, and then started going off to these forests on my own. Some of these maps for the old growth timber sales give you the most beautiful forests to go see, and you get to see them without crowds of other people, and you get to see them with the wildlife still there. I've seen the animal tracks for bear tracks and mountain lion tracks and bobcat tracks, and it's just a fantastic opportunity to go and see the forest by itself. I'd also like to encourage people to come out to see come out to the BARC Fest, which is occurring in September. That's on September 17th. It's our yearly sort of celebration. Now, I know fundraisers are often like going to the dentist. We do them because we're supposed to. But I have to tell you, and past history is no indication of future results, but the BARC Fest last year was a fantastic gathering. It was a lot of fun. And there'll be, you know, all the typical, silent auction, great gifts and things. There'll be Forest Watch information there. You can get to meet some of the people and see that this is not a dour group of people, of insane people. It's, people are fairly, they're nice people, they're engaged, and they're fun people to be around.
Well, and everyone likes a fun time, and most everybody likes the forest.
Forests are fantastic, and it's such a gem right in our backyard.
Well, folks can contact BARC. They're a local group here in town. They're up close to MLK and Knott, I suppose.
Mm-hmm.
Their phone number is 503-331-0374. And as we mentioned earlier, their website, which is really well laid out, easy to navigate, and has a lot of great detailed information, is www.bark-out, bark-out.org. And I'd suggest that if you're even remotely interested in finding out what's going on extraction-wise on Mount Hood and, I guess, associated BLM lands in the area, too, that you check these guys out. So thank you very much for coming on in this morning, Charlie. Really appreciate it.
My pleasure.
And we are now going to bring Josh Laughlin, who works with the Cascadia Wildlands Project, into the mix here. And we're going to move our way a little bit upstream of the Willamette and get to the actual Willamette National Forest. So welcome to you, Josh.
Well, thanks for having me today, Andrew.
My pleasure. So we've been listening to Charlie Ferranti from BARC talk a little bit about what's going on up here. And he didn't have as kind of like urgent and scary news as you'll have about some of what's going on down in the Willamette area. But I'm going to give you the same question I gave him. Tell us about a couple of the main, most important, urgent things that you'd like folks, I guess primarily listening at 100.7 in Corvallis, to contact y'all to get involved with and help out.
Sure. Well, there's a tragedy happening in the McKenzie District of the Willamette National Forest. These are the forests that are world-renowned, home to rare and endangered species, our municipal water supply, an area that folks from all over the world come to see. A tragedy is happening up there right now. There's over 3,000 acres of mature and old-growth forest slated to be logged this summer or next in this watershed just upstream from Eugene. Folks from all over the region, even the world, come here to recreate, to see the beauty, to hike and mountaineer the glacial peaks. And if you can believe it, the forests the Forest Service, the Willamette National Forest, is still auctioning off our heritage forest to the highest bidder. One of the real problems, timber sales up there that we're currently dealing with, is the Robinson Scott Landscape Management Project, a project that was auctioned off years ago, planned back in the late 90s, and we're just starting to see trees hit the ground out there. Keep in mind, this project was based on trying to mimic historic wildfire by aggressively logging these forests. And for the past year or so, we've been engaging the agency, the Cascadia Wildlands Project, ONRC, the local students at the U of O have been working with the agency, business owners up the river, and community members to draw attention to this tragedy that's going on up there.
And just for reference, for folks who don't know, ONRC is the Oregon Natural Resources Council, another group that deals a lot with forests, and they're a Portland-based group, ONRC.org.
So we've been working real closely with business owners up there, getting local businesses that have a vested interest in a healthy Mackenzie River corridor to really buy into this effort. And we got over a dozen local businesses up there to endorse our proposal to the agency, which says we want to see you cease and desist logging mature and old growth forests on our public lands in this world-class watershed. And we actually worked with these business owners, with locals here, to get the Eugene City Council to adopt a resolution in May, 7-1, that urged the Forest Service, the Willamette National Forest, to end mature and old growth logging up in the watershed.
Wow.
And right now we're beginning to see trees fall at the Robinson Scott Project just above the Mackenzie River, adjacent to the Mount Washington Wilderness. This is a problem. Public lands, forests being sold off and logged to the highest bidder.
Okay, now you said that this sale was, designed and the public process was several years ago, late 90s. So this is a Northwest Forest Plan sale.
Yes.
Has anything changed in it as a result of the Bush administration's ill-named Healthy Forest Initiative, or is there no impact to this?
You know, there's no impact of the Bush administration's agenda for forests, you know, with this timber sale. This is a straight-up Northwest Forest Plan, log in the sacrifice zone, you know, on public forests, the area we call, or that are known as the Matrix Forests. Mm-hmm. And they basically created a massive landscape management project cloaked as, you know, mimicking natural wildfire. As most listeners know, wildfire doesn't saw big old trees to the ground and take them to the mill.
Well, and wildfire barely and rarely damages big trees anyway.
Oftentimes, that's the case, yeah. So we've called them out on this. We don't want to see them trying to mimic natural processes in the forest. We want to see, and we're urging the Mackenzie District to focus on true and genuine forest health projects to truly create healthy forests. And by that, we mean focusing the chainsaws in plantation forests, young tree farms that have been created on the landscape due to the past 50 years of industrial clear cutting. Most listeners have probably walked around public forests and all of a sudden stumbled into a big tree farm, dense thickets that have grown back, you know, planted real tight, that don't actually act as a healthy forest anymore. So there's a viable option out there that the Forest Service needs to be investing public resources into to truly create healthy forests, not logging our remaining mature and old-growth forests up in our municipal watershed.
Now, why don't we jump to something else that is going on, and we'll come back to the issue of fire in a moment. But in the Mackenzie watershed, there's an ongoing tree sit that drew some angry, I assume, locals over the weekend, and there were apparently three or four loggers early Saturday afternoon who shot six times at the tree sit and ground support folks, and I'm curious if you can give us a little more detail about, I guess, either what happened or what's going on since.
Well, a little bit of background there. One of the timber sales that has been broken out of the Robinson Scott environmental impact statement that I described earlier is called the Sten timber sale. It's roughly 200 acres of mature and old growth forest, part of that project that is about to be logged. Locals with the Mackenzie Watershed Guardians, locals that live in the area here and in the watershed, have decided to take it into their own hands and have established a tree sit high in the canopy of these big 5-foot-wide Douglas fir trees. This was just about 2 weeks ago. This past weekend, I had a bunch of messages left on my voicemail about vigilantes up in Unit 43 of the Sten timber sale shooting their guns, high-caliber guns, at tree sitters and their supporters on the ground. Not a pretty scene going on up there. They're going to be hosting a press conference today at the Eugene Federal Building, 7th and Pearl, at 1:30, to talk about and demand an investigation into this. I mean, just imagine if tree sitters were out there shooting their guns at contract workers, which mm-hmm. they obviously never do. What kind of response from law enforcement would we see there? My guess is you'd see swarms of, you know, federal agents and marshals, going out there and really getting to the bottom of what's going on. None of that has happened. I've informed the supervisor of the Willamette National Forest about the issue going on out there, and also the district ranger, and I'm continuing to press them to do an investigation into this extremely serious matter. People are risking their lives to protect these public lands, mature and old growth forests, and our water supply, and shouldn't be shot at by vigilantes, and especially shouldn't go by undealt with by law enforcement.
Now, at the risk of being abrupt, why don't we let's just see if we can get some more detail about that on the evening news tonight.
And, sure.
And we'll get folks in touch with you all about that later. Let's go and discuss a little bit, as time's beginning to run short, about the B&B fire complex and the resulting salvage sales that are going on.
Yeah, this is one of the other major issues the Cascadia Wildlands Project and some of our conservation allies are working on right now. As readers or as listeners might remember, in the aftermath of the 2000 B&B fire, the Deschutes National Forest, just across the Cascade Crest from the Mackenzie Watershed, has sold off 5,000 acres of designated old growth reserves, kind of an oxymoron there, sold off old growth reserves to the highest bidder, in this case, Boise Home Buildings Products and International Forest Products, two major multinational corporations. And what we're seeing here is a flurry of logging going on in the old growth reserves as we're coordinating our preliminary injunction request. We've filed a lawsuit challenging what we believe is a very illegal timber sale in these designated old growth reserves. And as we're arguing that preliminary injunction, logging has begun just about 5 days ago in the shadows of Mount Jefferson and Three Finger Jack in the world-renowned Metolius Basin.
And this is a common strategy, it seems, of log it before it can be declared illegal to log.
Absolutely. It's a theme that we've been seeing throughout the region here over the last couple years. The federal agencies, the government, the Forest Service, and BLM typically declare an emergency after a fire, which skirts the public appeals process. It pushes the public out of the process so they can move in there without public input right away. And that's what we're seeing up at the B&B project. So as we're trying to get our complaint together and brief a preliminary injunction in court, the saws are buzzing. Normally, we'd have a stay period while they deal with our appeal of the project, but they've nullified that under the Bush administration's new regulations for forests.
Okay, so would that be like a temporary restraining order before a formal injunction is issued?
Yeah, that's exactly what we're doing right now, is we're trying to get the judge to say, hold off Forest Service and logging companies. There's issues that need to be dealt with here. So we're asking them for an injunction on the logging so the judge can hear and weigh the merits of our case.
And just in closing out here, can you give folks some ideas of opportunities to become involved in what Cascadia Wildlands is doing? And again, this is really going to be more geared to our Corvallis listeners who are, you know, within a somewhat reasonable drive of getting down into Eugene. But
absolutely. Well, in regards to the B&B fire area, you know, there's some suspicion around the origin of the fire. Listeners probably remember Bush showed up, and 3 days before the fire started out there, he showed up in eastern Oregon stumping for his Healthy Forests Initiative back in 2003. A group up in Portland, Back to the Wall, is organizing a demonstration on the Capitol steps in Salem on Tuesday, September 6th at 3 p.m. to demand that Governor Kulongowski reopen the investigation about this case. We've seen in the past this theme of light it, fight it, log it, and we don't want to see that happen anymore. We do not need to reward arsonists with massive clear-cutting proposals in the public's heritage-designated old-growth reserves. So that's Tuesday, September 6th at 3 p.m. Encourage people to call Back to the Wall for more information and carpools. That's 503-378-4582. And in regards to the McKenzie issues, the Cascadia Wildlands Project is going to be leading a hike up to the Robinson Scott area, the contested area in our municipal water supply up in the Heritage Forest there. On Sunday, September 4th, leaving Eugene at 10 a.m., from the Indigo District, located at 13th and Oak Street. Again, we'll be leaving at 10 a.m. Contact the Cascadia Wildlands Project for more information, 541-434-1463, or check us out on the webpage at CaskWild, CaskWild.org.
All right. Thank you so much for joining us this morning, Josh.
Well, I appreciate the opportunity. There's lots going on out our public forests, and the only way for us to influence what goes on them is for the public to see some of these threatened areas themselves. So I encourage listeners to get in touch with the Cascadia Wildlands Project, come see some of these threatened areas, and begin to advocate for their protection themselves.
And Josh Laughlin works with the Cascadia Wildlands Project down in Eugene, and he joined us from his office there. Thanks again, Josh.
I appreciate it.
All right, take care.
Bye-bye.
And when we come back, we will go to Central, Eastern, and then Southern Oregon. And again, the Cascadia Wildlands Project can be contacted at 541-434-1463 or online at www.cascwild.org. We're going to have a little musical interlude here, and we'll be back with Karen Coulter from the Blue Mountains Biodiversity Project.
I walked out in the forest when the silver moon was on the rise, and Venus shimmered in the fading. And I sat down very quiet, tiny shadow underneath the trees. And I heard the night, I heard the songs of night. Oh, if I had a season to call my own, I would come to the woods alone. I would lie in the forest and dance all day. I would sing sweeter music at break of dawn. I would dance in the evening light. Some say it's the ions. Others tell me it's the songs of trees. And I don't know why. No, I don't know. But when I'm out in the forest, deep inside me is a song of peace.
Peg Millett from her recording Clear Horizon, that's Forest Song. You're listening to People Rise Up on KBOO in Portland, Oregon. And we're doing an hour about threats to Oregon's national forests. We've talked about the kind of north and southern part of the Wetside Cascades. And joining us now is Karen Coulter, who runs the Blue Mountains Biodiversity Project and primarily focuses on eastern and some central Oregon forests. So welcome back to KBOO's airwaves, Karen.
Hi.
Hi.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you for joining us. Okay, same question the other two guests got at the front end. What are the couple of most pressing issues you are dealing with, logging or otherwise, on national forests?
Well, we're dealing with a lot of different things. We're trying to protect biodiversity, so we're dealing with timber sale logging and, to some extent, livestock grazing and the increased use of toxic herbicides and exotic biocontrols, as well as mining and other things. Specifically, one of the biggest threats right now is Bush's undemocratic so-called Healthy Forest Initiative, including the use of categorical exclusions, which basically expedite the process of logging without chance for public appeal, forcing groups to go immediately to court
now,
soon as a decision is made.
Now, is that
after the comment period?
Is that somewhat similar to the reality of the salvage rider from 1996, where there was no opportunity for input and no environmental review?
Well, in that case, I don't think there was opportunity for litigation either. In this case, they're trying to make it look like we still have laws. That was referred to the lawless logging salvage rider.
Mm-hmm.
But in reality, they're expediting the process in such a way that it's very difficult for groups to successfully fight sales. For instance, with the emergency status determination, which is used to expedite logging after fires, a lot of the judges don't seem to think that they can issue a temporary restraining order, so we're having to, as Josh was pointing out, we're having to allow some logging to happen, actually, in order to get a preliminary injunction instead, because we've lost so many fire sales to failure to get a temporary restraining order, so they don't get heard in court. They don't have their day in court before they're logged. We actually won the Flagtail case on the Malheur National Forest, but almost the entire sale was logged before we won that. And then the Monument case on the Malheur National Forest was the same claims and should have won, and it still hasn't been heard in court. And meanwhile, it's all been logged, including a very illegal rush of logging a lot of beautiful, big, old-growth trees, ponderosa pine and western larch in that sale. So we're losing a lot of forests in a very expedited process where they're rushing the sales through with categorical exclusions. They don't have to write an environmental assessment or an environmental impact statement, so they can prepare them very quickly. And then there's no appeal period. So as soon as the comment period's over, they can start logging, and we have to jump on it and immediately litigate. And a lot of groups aren't even in the position to do that. We are, but it's very tough. It's keeping our lawyers very busy and stretching our resources.
Well,
there was a particular categorical exclusion post-fire logging case where they wanted to log over 100 live, viable, old-growth trees, and they were rushing it along, hoping, I guess, that nobody would notice on the Malheur, and we have that in court right now.
Well, and it seems like that's often the dynamic out where you are, because although most of Oregon's national forest land lies east of the Cascade Crest, the vast supermajority of forest activists live west, and primarily...
Exactly. It's 63% of Oregon's forests are east of the Cascade Crest, but we're very stretched for resources out here because we don't have public locally to support us for doing, we can't do things like direct action, for instance. There's no public support base for it. And also these sales are spread all over the map, mm-hmm. over thousands of acres. The B&B fire sale, for instance, covers almost 7,000 acres and has a lot of road access. And so we're trying to fight these sales legally, but we could use all the help we can get because Eastern Oregon traditionally has been a political sacrifice zone as well. So we don't seem to be able to attract as much funding as some of the West Side groups, but we do survive based on a lot of volunteerism. We have a lot of volunteers come out and help us field check the sales every summer.
Now, the Bush administration's so-called Healthy Forest Initiative, you referenced the categorical exclusion aspect mm-hmm. of that. The exclusion angle is pretty straightforward, but categorical, can you give us a little hint on what they mean when they use categorical? I mean, does that mean, you know, anything that involves this particular type of tree cutting process can be excluded from review, or how does that work?
Well, it's about 10 different categories, maybe even more. I don't have them all in front of me, but for instance, there will be an exclusion for up to 250 acres of live tree logging after insects or disease, something like that. There will be up to 1,000 acres excluded from having to write an environmental assessment or an environmental impact statement or allowing public appeal for a fire-burned forest, or actually more than that, and up to 4,500 acres for doing a prescribed burn on public land with getting a lot of that public process. So they have different categories of situations that they can exercise this authority in. That's what the categorical refers to.
Okay, and are those exclusions tailored to the region or the forest, or do they apply nationally across the board?
It's nationally. So this is a threat that national forest protection groups are facing. And in regard to the emergency status determination, in particular on burned forests, which is what the B&B fire sale is under, I want to emphasize that burned forests are very much alive. Mm-hmm. There's no legitimate ecologically sound reason to log soon after a fire, and there's a lot of science saying don't do that, because logging right after a fire is like mugging a burn victim. They're more vulnerable to soil impacts and sedimentation of streams, and there's also a lot of woodpeckers and other birds who seem to depend on periodic burns for an adequate prey base. And it's also not as if everything's dead. Fires burn in a mosaic pattern and don't take out all the living trees. And when I was field checking with a lot of volunteers, the B&B fire area, it's totally lush with wildflowers, shrubs, new tree seedlings, green saplings and mature trees scattered around that survived the fire, and signs of woodpeckers, neotropical songbirds, elk, deer, bear, coyotes, squirrels, many other species. So I just wanted people to know that.
Well, and thanks for giving that little description, too, because you referenced some larger animals that are not seen on the west side with mm-hmm. really any frequency. And that's another thing about the central and eastern Oregon forests is it's, you know, there's more, I don't know if it's maybe necessarily more intact, but I suppose in areas it would be, but there's more habitat just because
there's less human disturbance out here. It's
right.
Much lower population base. And, for instance, in 2 days on the Umatilla National Forest, I saw at close range a coyote pup, a cougar, and a bear, a black bear. That would be very unusual to see within that time period. It is here, too, to some extent, but I see a lot on the west side. I see a lot more wildlife. It's also more open forest so that you can see the wildlife easier. So it's very exciting to be out here field checking timber sales because you do see a lot of wildlife. We've seen goshawk up close and pine martens and all kinds of things, peregrine falcon. And I just want to use that a little bit as a lead-in for another major threat to the region, and this includes the west side as well, which is the Region 6 invasive weed management plan.
Because
that would use very toxic herbicides and largely untested new herbicides and exotic biocontrols. And there you're looking at a whole score of ecological impacts like decline of amphibians, neotropical songbird reproduction, decline of native plants, as well as human safety and health threats and contamination of wells and springs and agricultural crops. So that's something upcoming that we're going to be trying to ride herd on and to fight off the worst of.
And so just in closing, why don't you give some opportunities for folks to help out with some of, and again, you know, we understand that the distance involved, you know, maybe there's people listening in Central and Eastern Oregon. I'd like to think so. But, you know, for folks who want to kind of make a longer time commitment to get involved in some of the Central and Eastern Oregon stuff, what types of opportunities have you got sort of short term and longer term?
Okay, well, we have the volunteer internship program, which is really popular, where people come out anywhere from mid-May through September each year and help us field check timber sales. And in the process, we do a lot of hiking and camping out and eating together out in the woods for days at a time. People see a lot of wildlife, and they learn how to identify native plants and wildlife sign. And I'm open for people signing up for that. You get to see another part of Oregon that people don't see very much. A lot of people stay on the west side and miss all the beauty out here. We also need donations to keep our work going. Funding has been very difficult with the economic decline under the Bush administration, so donations are definitely needed for us to keep going. And if you want to ask to be on our mailing list, we can send people action alerts, and then people, we need more people to comment on timber sales and other projects like the herbicide plan. So I'd like to give our address and phone number for that.
Yeah, please.
Our message phone number is 541-385-9167. That's 541-385-9167. And our address is 27803 Williams Lane, Fossil, Oregon, 97830. And I'd just like to point out that the root of all this is corporate dominance over ecosystems and communities, and we need to assert our right as self-governing citizens and not succumb to this climate of fear that's being created. Stand up for our civil liberties as well as our ecosystems. And I'd also like to encourage people to support the Oregon Natural Desert Association, which is fighting livestock grazing and impacts in eastern and central Oregon, which is a big threat to the biodiversity out here.
And if you didn't get that contact information, the phone number, the message phone for the Blue Mountains Biodiversity Project is 541-385-9167. And the mailing address is 27803 Williams Lane, Fossil, Oregon, 97830, Blue Mountains Biodiversity Project, and Karen Coulter runs that. Thank you very much for being on the show this morning, Karen.
Well, thank you. I really appreciate the work KBOO does.
All right. Thank you for joining us. Take care.
Bye.
And there is a website for the Blue Mountains Biodiversity Project, but it's not run by Karen, and it's not real frequently updated. However, it is bmbp.cascadiarising.org. bmbp.cascadiarising.org. And that's another way to find out a little bit about what they're doing. But again, it's not real regularly updated. So there's that. So we're going to move into our home stretch here and go down to Southern Oregon, where George Sexton works as the conservation director for the Klamath Siskiyou Wildlands Center, a longtime local group down there doing a wide variety of work to protect public lands. Thank you very much for joining us this morning, and welcome back to KBOO's Airwaves, George.
Thanks for having me on this morning, Andrew.
My pleasure. Now, we've heard from the kind of north and central wet side, some about central and eastern Oregon. What's the big stuff going on right now, public land, national forest-wise, down in southwestern Oregon?
Well, we've got two different types of aggressive logging that are being proposed by the federal agencies these days in both southwest Oregon and northwest California. And those two different logging schemes are the post-fire logging that we see at areas like Biscuit and Timbered Rock, and then the green old-growth logging program that we see throughout the region. And I think I'm going to start with the post-fire logging because that's been in the news a little bit more of late, and there's a lot of sort of up-to-the-minute updates going on with Biscuit and Timbered Rock. And so if you don't mind, that's kind of where I'd like to begin.
Please.
All right. With Biscuit in particular, I'm sure that a good number of your listeners have been following what the Forest Service has been planning there. It's the largest timber sale that Forest Service has come up with in the last 100 years of the agency. And it was a response to the 2002 Biscuit fire event that occurred around the Calmeopsis Wilderness, the second largest wilderness area in Oregon. And on the heels of that fire, the Forest Service came out with a proposal that would have logged about 97 million board feet. And that's a whole heck of a lot of timber. And they got a lot of public comments on that draft proposal to log. But they also got a lot of political pressure saying that just logging 97 million board feet isn't enough. You know, you need to go in there and really get everything. And so that political pressure didn't really match up with what the public was saying or what the scientists were saying. In fact, he had folks like Dr. Jerry Franklin, who is one of the authors of the Northwest Forest Plan, saying that this post-fire ecosystem in a fire-evolved and fire-dependent forest was one of the most important forest types that one could have, that it is an underrepresented forest type, that it contributes to biological diversity, and that the forest, in fact, needs and requires fire in order for many of its species to regenerate and to have a functioning and healthy ecosystem. Rather than listen to the public or the scientists, the Forest Service went with the political pressure that they were getting, particularly from Douglas County Mills, and drastically expanded the amount of salvage that they wanted to do with the Biscuit Fire. Increased the level of cut that they were shooting for up to about 370 million board feet. And that 370 million board feet included not only lands that had been allocated by the Northwest Forest Plan for logging, called matrix lands, but also lands that everyone had thought were now protected, in particular lands called late successional or old growth reserves, and most importantly, inventoried roadless areas. So what happened is that the Forest Service used this natural fire event in a forest that requires fire and that is evolved in fire to say that these protective land use allocations like late successional reserves and like inventoried roadless areas, are no longer protected once you have an inevitable fire event. And the precedent of that is that what the Forest Service is trying to accomplish through Biscuit is to say that there are no federally protected lands in the long term in fire-evolved landscapes. So that has us very worried.
Yeah, it seems a little unfair. I mean, especially since fire is a perfectly natural and, as you mentioned and other folks mentioned this morning, necessary part of the landscape, to use fire as a reason to remove all protections kind of here and there as desired. I mean, unfair doesn't even come close to it, but that's, you know, that's the word I'm coming up with.
Right. It also seems to set the stage for the agency saying that at some point we're going to log everything, and that natural plant succession, the will of the public, environmental law, that all of these things are going to take a back seat to the idea that the Forest Service at some point can log pretty much every acre of ground that they manage. And the exception that you hear to that a lot is, well, you know, wilderness areas seem to be pretty safe, right? Well, you know, you don't often hear of really aggressive logging plans for congressional designated wilderness. People tend to think of those as the most protected land use allocation, you know, that exists. Well, unfortunately, in Biscuit, as part of the initial what they liked to call hazard tree logging that they did through that timber sale, they actually did go ahead and log in the Calmeopsis wilderness. Mm-hmm. So when you hear the contention that wilderness areas, you know, are protected and inviolate, in the case of Biscuit, that just wasn't what the reality was. So it wasn't just that you saw late successional reserves and inventory roadless areas logged. You also had trees felled in the wilderness area itself. Now, the Forest Service says that that logging was an error and a mistake, but recent findings that we had this last month lead us to believe that it seems like it's a pattern, because it wasn't just the 2004 mistake that they made by logging in the Calmeopsis wilderness, but now we're finding out that as part of the contested Fiddler late successional reserve timber sale, that the Forest Service also logged in the Babyfoot botanical area. So that increases our list to the Forest Service is now logged in a wilderness area, a protected botanical area, late successional reserves, and has a record of decision out to log in the inventoried roadless areas. It makes you think that you know, if the Forest Service had been around when Eden was around, that they would have logged Eden. We really aren't seeing any area that the Forest Service is willing to say, well, you know, maybe this isn't an appropriate spot for logging.
Okay, now the idea that they said it was a mistake makes me wonder really what's going on, because these folks have GPS, they have satellites, they can pinpoint probably to the half foot where all their boundaries are, where everything is, all the, you know, everything you've described, late successional reserves, you know, important streams for fish, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So do they really expect people to believe that they just kind of didn't know where they were? I mean, that seems bizarre.
It does seem bizarre. And I know that there are a number of good folks in the Siskiyou National Forest and the Rogue River National Forest who are doing their best to implement what they see as, you know, their congressional mandate. And a lot of the problems are the congressional mandates for the Forest Service and the BLM and the Northwest Forest Plan that governs all of the national forests on the west side of the Cascades from the very northern part of Washington State down through Northern California, that both Congress and the Northwest Forest Plan really view forests as a commodity rather than as a amalgamation of values, including recreation, water quality, wildlife, all the other things that go into national forests, you know. And so,
well, and that really brings us full circle, as Charlie Ferranti from BARC, the Portland group that led the show, led off the show, referenced. The Forest Service is part of the Department of Agriculture. Forests are referred to in agricultural terms, annual crops. Cut them, you grow them.
That's correct. And so I don't want to say that the Forest Service, in, you know, either intentionally or unintentionally went in and logged wilderness or went in and logged the botanical area. The fact is that the trees were logged, and mm-hmm. we can't possibly put them back, and that a millennia of evolution and fire-evolved landscapes and plant succession has been set back, and that these areas have been turned into fiber plantations for the sole benefit of the timber industry, and that in southwest Oregon we have, oh, about 5 million acres of native forests that have already been turned into plantations. And if 5 million acres isn't enough to provide for our wood fiber needs in a sustainable way, then my contention is that we're never going to get there. You know, that there's no amount of native forest that you can turn into fiber plantations to finally satiate the hunger of the timber industry for old growth wood, you know.
George, we're running out of time quickly here. Can you give folks some suggestions about ways they can become involved if they want to help out in defending Southern Oregon forests?
Yeah. If you go to our website, the Klamath Siskiyou Wildlands Center website at kswild.org. We have a number of action alerts up there that folks can take, and then we've also got a timber sale database that will let you know where the Forest Service and BLM are planning current timber sales or road building projects through Wildlands. And I think that that's an easier way to get involved than for me to just list out sales one by one for you.
Yeah, I agree. Well, thank you very much for joining us this morning, George, to give a little bit of a snapshot on some of what's going on regarding National Forest down in the southwestern part of the state.
Sure. Appreciate you having me on, Andrew.
All right. Take care, George.
I know.
George Sexton is the conservation director of the Klamath Siskiyou Wildlands Center. And as he mentioned, their website is www.kswild.org. And thank you very much to Karen Coulter from the Blue Mountains Biodiversity Project, who was on before George. And then in the first half of the show, we heard from Charlie Ferranti from BARC here in Portland, and Josh Laughlin at the Cascadia Wildlands Project. The People Rise Up website at kboo.fm has links to all those groups, other resources, and I'll be putting some more stuff up, including an MP3 of this program, very shortly. Thank you very much for listening to the program today. If you have any questions or comments about anything you heard, you can send me email at kboo@riseup.net. Regular mail, 20 Southeast 8th Avenue, Portland, Oregon, 97214. And I want to let you folks know that 2 weeks from today, it is KBOO's Fall 2005 Membership Drive. Maybe your membership is due. Maybe you've never been a member of KBOO. It's a great opportunity to support your community radio station that you depend on year-round for all sorts of news, public affairs, and music programming. 2 weeks from today, this show will begin at 9:30 a.m. and run until 11. Nafiz Mossadegh Ahmed from but his website's globalresearch.org. He wrote a book called The War on Truth a couple, 3 years back about 9/11. He's got a new one out called The War on Truth, and we will be talking all about that. 3 weeks from today, author Tariq Ali will be on the program talking about his latest release, Speaking of Empire and Resistance. And then on September 28th, in about a month, Vandana Shiva will be on the program to talk about her book, Earth Democracy.